to think yourself on our side? Had I joined the fight in the Cutlass, your mission would have ended there, good dwarf, the elf warrior replied. And you can tell that to your drow friend who is standing behind me. Behind Dahlia, Drizzt stood up straight, and in front of her, Brunner's face twisted up at her bravado. Tell ye, Athrogate muttered at Brunner's side. It occurred to Brunner then just how young this elf female was. He hadn't really thought of that before, since everything had been such a jolt and a rush from the moment he and Drizzt had entered Luskin. But she showed it. She stood before a dwarf king, and with a legendary drow warrior behind her, and not a hint of worry showed on her face. Only someone quite young could feel so immortal. She had never experienced loss, was Brunner's initial thought, and couldn't comprehend its possibility. He studied her more carefully for a few moments, though, and saw through the calm confidence just enough to realize that he was probably way off the mark with that last thought. More likely, Dahlia had experienced loss, great loss, and didn't care if that was again a possibility. Perhaps her bravado even invited it. Brunner glanced at Athrogate, thinking the other dwarf's warning about Dahlia quite prescient at that moment. She was dangerous. If you're all so anxious for a fight, you'll find one soon enough, Jarlaxle remarked, obviously trying to break the tension. Despite her outward confidence, Dahlia wondered if she'd played her hand correctly. She stared at the dwarf a few moments longer, trying to rid herself of the nagging notion that the crusty old warrior saw right through her. She dismissed that concern out of hand. Dahlia had no time for that. She turned to find Drizzt leaning easily against a tree, his weapons sheathed, his forearms resting on them with his hands crossed in front of him. "Do you share your friend's concern?" she asked. "The thought has occurred to me." "And has it found root?" Drizzt looked past her to Brunner before offering a smile and answering simply, "No." Dahlia's stare grew intense, and Drizzt matched it. Once again, as it had just been with Brunner, it seemed to her as if one of her companions was trying to see right through her. But she had her footing back, thanks to Drizzt's last answer. She eased her walking staff down beside her and leaned on it, but didn't relent with her stare, didn't blink, didn't allow the legendary warrior, Drizzt, any sense that he'd gained the upper hand. But neither did Drizzt blink. "We should be on our way," Jarlaxle said from the side, and he pointedly walked between the two, breaking their line of vision. "Did you notice our adversaries?" Jarlaxle asked Drizzt.
"Coming from the south," the ranger replied. "I noted several groups."
"Focused?"
"Searching," Drizzt replied. "I doubt they know our exact location, and I'm certain they're oblivious to the caves we sighted to the east."
"But are those the right caves?" Jarlaxle asked. "Once we enter, we can expect our enemies to seal us off."
A long and uncomfortable silence followed.
"We move quickly," Dahlia said at length, and unexpectedly, for all thought that Drizzt, who had been extensively scouting the area, would make the call.
"Bah! But your friends are trying to flush us, and you're leaping from the grass afore their hunting dogs," Brunner argued.
But Dahlia was shaking her head with every word. "They're not trying to flush us. They know for certain that we're here," she explained, turning back to Drizzt. "You said there were several groups."
Drizzt nodded.
"Sylora Somm is in a desperate struggle with the Netherese in Neverwinter Wood," Dahlia explained. "She has few Ashmedai to spare. If she sent more than a handful to the crags, then she's confident we're here."
"She wants us to lead her to the cave," Brunner grumbled.
"She would rather none of us even reach the cave," Dahlia replied without turning back to him. "All she desires is that no one interfere with the primordial."
"Would she not wish to aid in aiming the beast's outburst?" Drizzt asked, "to ensure the catastrophe she craves."
"There is malevolence in the primordial," Dahlia replied. It is not an entirely indifferent force, and not entirely unthinking.
There is some debate about that, Jarlaxle replied, but again Dahlia shook her head.
How precise was its first attack? The easy and nearest target, she reasoned. Had it blown to either the west or the east, few would have been killed. Now it sensed the life in Neverwinter and buried it.
There's life in Neverwinter again, Brunner said.
That would be a victory for Silora, Dahlia answered, finally turning to regard the dwarf. But not her preferred outcome.
Luskin, Jarlaxle reasoned.
The Primordial has had a decade to test its prison, Dahlia said, to recognize the magic that held it, to feel the residual power of the host tower, to perhaps send minions along the tendrils to better locate the city.
So Silora believes that the beast will facilitate her goals without her aid, Drizzt interjected. And when Dahlia and the others turned to regard him, he added, The longer we delay, the more we play to her strength. Dahlia couldn't suppress her grin, glad for the support. Support that conveyed a measure of trust, not only in her reasoning, but in her sincerity.
Our best choice is to be aggressive, Dahlia said, nodding.
So, too, did Drizzt nod.
And so it was decided.
Dahlia sprinted down the side of a ravine, leaping from stone to stone. The ground was uneven, and she realized she was moving dangerously fast, but he was beating her, and Dahlia didn't like to lose, particularly not with Ashmedai's zealots down below in the small canyon, with battle waiting to be joined. She and Drizzt had come over the high ridge after doubling back to flank the Ashmedai pursuit, their goal to sweep down on the distracted cultists from on high. To the northeast, the dwarves and Jarlaxle had dug in, and Drizzt and Dahlia had barely crested the canyon side when the shouts of the approaching devil worshippers echoed off the stones. Without hesitation, the pair had leaped away, but Drizzt had quickly outpaced Dahlia, sprinting ahead with amazing grace, grace Dahlia believed she could match, and even more amazing speed. His feet seemed a blur, fast stepping forward, leaping from side to side, picking a path that Dahlia might follow, but certainly not at that pace. So she had taken a steeper route, but still Drizzt moved ahead of her, she simply couldn't believe it. A silver streak flashed out of the brush down below and to the side. Not only was the drow running at an incredible pace, he was shooting that fabulous bow of his as he went. Dahlia put her head down and ran on, concentrating on merely finding a solid place to put her feet as she quick-stepped through one particularly uneven stretch. She would get down there right beside him, if not ahead of him, she told herself. Then Dahlia realized that she no longer had any choice in the matter, that she had let her pride cloud her judgment. She realized, to her horror, that she couldn't slow down if she wanted to, that if she didn't simply keep throwing one foot out in front of the other, she would stumble and skid down the rest of the slope on her face. She crashed through some brush and tried desperately to grab on, but the plant came free in the loose soil and Dahlia continued on her barreling way. And that way led to a sudden drop, she realized, as she neared a stony channel some 10 feet deep or more and a like distance wide. Dahlia didn't even think as she came to the edge. Purely on instinct, she ducked her head and thrust her long staff down below. She kicked off as she planted the end and somehow managed to secure her grip enough on the top end of that staff to cartwheel over and across the channel. With perfect muscle control, Dahlia came right over and back to her feet on the other side of the channel, and managed to wipe the shocked look off her face almost immediately when she noted Drizzt down below, scimitars drawn, staring at her in disbelief. Dahlia winked at him to reinforce the notion that the gymnastics had been a part of her plan from the beginning, and as she pulled the staff up behind her, she broke it fast into flails and ended her cartwheel with a spinning move that had her new weapons immediately into the flow. Much to the chagrin of an Ashmedai cultist who appeared seemingly out of nowhere to charge in at her. From a wider opening to the north, Drizzt was surprised to see Dahlia cartwheeling over the narrow chasm, gracefully inverted and coming to her feet with easy and complete balance. Aside from the dramatic and effective move, which was remarkable enough, Drizzt was shocked to see that the elf warrior had so nearly paced him on his descent. His movements were magically enhanced by the anklets he wore, after all. He watched her go spinning above and past, heard the sound of battle engaged right after, and wanted to scramble up the side of the channel to join her, or at least to witness her fighting. But the drow had his own problems pressing in on him, with more than a dozen enemies trying to flank him left and right, and he set his focus accordingly. He rushed for the narrower channel, speeding ahead of the Ashmedai and the stones they threw at him. He spun and backed farther in as he entered, the bottleneck of the narrow ravine forcing his pursuers to stumble, practically falling over each other to get at the drow. It was one against three instead of one against a dozen, and those three found themselves hindered by the vertical stone walls, which reduced the warriors on each end of the line to more straightforward thrusting attacks rather than wide swings. Drizzt backed quickly, and when the three took the bait and lunged forward, he reversed his movements and darted in, his scimitars sweeping out wide and down behind the thrusting spears. With hardly a twist, Drizzt deflected those spears inward, nearly crossing them before the Ashmedai in the middle. The drow disengaged his blades immediately, and in the jumble of his three enemies, he struck hard and fast, rushing forward and stabbing left, right, and center. The Ashmedai tried to cover, tried to retreat, tried to keep some semblance of coordinated defense. But Drizzt was too quick for them, his blades avoiding their parries with ease, scimitar tips poking and stabbing. The three backed into the next Ashmedai in line, and their tangle only worsened. Relentlessly, Drizzt drove on. One Ashmedai managed a coordinated throw at the drow, the spear flying in for Drizzt's chest. Before Drizzt could move to block, something landed beside him, distracting him and costing him his defense. A flail flashed before him, cleanly picking off the spear, and the drow was relieved indeed to find Dahlia standing beside him. She noted his relief with a wink, and side by side they pressed forward, whirling blades and spinning flails. Their enemies knew Dahlia, and some called out her name, and their voices were filled with fear. Ashmedai poured back out of the narrow ravine and into the wider clearing.
"Retreat?" Drizzt asked Dahlia, for that seemed the obvious course.
With their enemies stumbling and disoriented, they could run out the other end of the ravine, run toward their companions who neared the cave openings. But Dahlia's smile showed a different intent. That grin, so full of life and full of fight, reveling in the challenge, wholly unafraid. When was the last time Drizzt Do'Urden had seen such a grin? When was the last time Drizzt Do'Urden had worn such a grin? His thoughts flashed back to a lair in Icewind Dale, when he had accompanied a young Wolfgar against a tribe of Verbeeg. The sensible move was retreat, but for some reason he didn't quite comprehend. Drizzt dismissed that out of hand and rushed out beside Dahlia into the wider clearing, where they could be flanked, surrounded even by their enemy's superior numbers. They didn't fight side by side, really, nor did they move back to back. There seemed no organization at all to Drizzt and Dahlia's dance. The drow let Dahlia lead the way, and merely reacted to her every turn and leap. She charged ahead, and he cut across her wake to protect her flank. She cut in front of him, and he went out behind her the opposite way, then stopped fast and reversed his course, so that when Dahlia stopped her movement, he came out beyond her, extending their line of devastation far to the side. And both of them kept their weapons working fast through every step, blades and flails spinning and reaching out to cut, to sting, to drive back their enemies. The Ashmedai shouted at each other constantly, trying to coordinate some defense against the duo. But before anything could begin to form, Drizzt and Dahlia moved in some unexpected manner or direction, so that the whole of the fight, both sides, seemed nothing more than a series of impromptu reactions. He crept along the branch, as silent as a hunting cat. He saw his prey below him, oblivious to his presence. Barabbas the Grey was shocked to discover that his daring plan had seemingly worked. He knew that the Thayan champion, the dangerous Dahlia, had gone out to the north with her many Ashmedai, and knew that Sylora's eyes had turned that way too, toward the rising mountain. Barabbas wondered if he might get past the wards and guards, if he might get nearer to this ultimate enemy. If he could be rid of Sylora Somm, perhaps Allegni would allow him to leave Forsaken Neverwinter and return to his work in the comforts of a true city. He moved out farther on the branch, over the impromptu encampment set below. Sylora was barely a dozen feet in front of and below him,
with her back to him as she bent forward, staring into the stump of a large tree. Barabbas figured he could crouch and spring and reach her from there, but his curiosity got the better of him, and he crept out just a bit farther until he could see over Silora's shoulder into the top of the stump, which was filled with water. And images moved about in the impromptu font. A scrying bowl. Barabbas couldn't resist. He inched out and moved his head low to the side of the branch, peering intently. He noted the movements of a fight in that pool of clairvoyance, tiny figures weaving and striking. He recognized some of the combatants as Ashmedai, and their movements showed them to be uncharacteristically on the defensive, not nearly as aggressive as Barabbas had come to expect of the fanatics. Then he saw one of their opponents, and he understood their hesitance, though the image otherwise added to his confusion. The spinning flail, the acrobatic movements, it had to be Dahlia. But why would Dahlia be fighting against Ashmedai? Perhaps it wasn't her. Perhaps there were more warriors like her, Barabbas wondered, and that thought didn't sit well with him. One Dahlia was more than enough for him. He didn't understand. The flail spun together in front of her and seemed to fuse together, and what had been two separate weapons comprised of two separate lengths suddenly became a single long staff. Yes, it was Dahlia, Barabbas knew then without doubt. He watched her stop abruptly before a trio of Ashmedai, who lurched back. She planted the tip of her staff and leaped up high, but instead of going forward into her enemies, she went backward. And another, apparently her ally, charged into the void. He saw black skin and a pair of scimitars spinning in devastating precision. Barabbas the Grey froze on the branch. To attempt anything other than that would have had him simply falling out of the tree. He couldn't draw breath in that surreal moment, and the world around him seemed to simply stop. All thoughts of Silora flew from him, even more so when he heard the newest foe, another elf female but undead, announcing her presence with the thump of a thunderbolt. Barabbas didn't want to go up against the sorceress Silora in a fair fight, and the thought of facing Valindra's Shadowmantle was even less appealing. He held his breath but couldn't help himself. He looked back to the scrying pool, but it had gone mercifully blank. The trance broken, a very shaken Barabbas the Grey slithered back to the tree and disappeared into the forest. Drizzt darted out to the right, cutting in front of Dahlia. He fell into a roll underneath her spinning flail, and his sudden appearance between the elf and her opponent had the tiefling Ashmedai distracted just enough for Dahlia to crack him on the side of the jaw and send him tumbling away. Drizzt came back to his feet right in front of a pair of fanatics, his blades going to work parrying and deflecting their furious onslaught. In a matter of a couple of heartbeats, he had them both on the defensive. His blades came faster and faster, soon moving from counters to initiating strikes. He worked around them as well, to gain a look at his fighting companion, and he was caught by surprise to see that Dahlia was no longer wielding a flail, and neither was she carrying the staff. She had something he could only describe as a tri-staff, with a longer centerpiece and two smaller poles spinning furiously to either side. For just a moment, Drizzt considered the strange weapon she carried, which could be put into so many combinations seemingly at will. Of course, he had no time to really contemplate the unique staff just then, particularly as a third Ashmedai joined the pair he was already fighting. He had to keep moving, as did Dahlia. They couldn't afford to get caught and surrounded. Drizzt backed toward Dahlia, moving fast. "Over!" he heard behind him, and he reflexively worked his scimitars in for low strikes, forcing the attention of the trio downward. Drizzt was not surprised when Dahlia vaulted over him, planting one foot on his set back and leaping out again, soaring past. But his opponents surely were, as their expressions showed. Dahlia came down on them, kicking one in the face, then a second, and bringing her staff, no longer a tri-staff but a single long pole, in fast behind her, sliding it through her grasp just enough to jab out with it like a spear, right into the throat of the third opponent. She cut away fast, planted the end of her weapon, and vaulted again. And so it went for a time, with Drizzt down low, sprinting all around, and Dahlia working vertically above him, leap after great leap. But even with that new twist, their initial momentum was beginning to fail, the Ashmedai drawing together into better defensive groups. Drizzt and Dahlia couldn't win,
They'd known that from the beginning, and it was time to create an exit for themselves. The needed distraction appeared on the ridge high above them a moment later. As always, the dependable Guinevere entered the fray right on time. With a roar that shook the stones and had every eye turned her way, the great panther leaped out far and high, flying down upon the most concentrated group of Ashmedai. As they scattered, screaming and diving, Drizzt and Dahlia retreated back through the narrow ravine and out the other end, scrambling over stones toward the cave opening where Brunner and the others waited. "Friend of yours?" Dahlia asked with a nod back at the cat, and a wicked smile. Drizzt smiled back, even wider when he heard the wild tumult behind them. He let Dahlia get ahead of him, and he trusted her to keep the way clear as he watched for pursuit. When they at last neared the rocky vale immediately preceding the caves, Drizzt called upon his enchanted anklets and sprinted to catch up to her. They crossed a small battlefield, several Ashmedai down, a couple moaning. One off to the side hung inverted from a tree, calling for help, held fast by the legs by whatever that was that shot from Jarlaxle's magical wand. Dahlia veered for the victim and Drizzt winced, thinking she would surely crack open the trapped Ashmedai's skull. To his surprise and relief, she merely patted the trapped woman on the side of the face as she skipped past her with a laugh. Just past the battlefield, they scrambled over a rocky mound, revealing a small vale below dotted with several cave entrances.
"Here!"
Brunner called from one, and Drizzt and Dahlia moved to join him.
"Your panther," Dahlia said, glancing back.
"Guinevere has already returned to the astral plane, awaiting my next call," Drizzt assured her. She nodded and skipped into the dark cave. But Drizzt paused to watch her, pleased by her concern for the great cat. They, even Brunner, had to belly crawl to get out of the first chamber of the cave, but they moved with all speed, with sounds of pursuit echoing behind them. They came out of that low channel into a smaller but higher-ceilinged place, in which Athrogate and Jarlaxle waited. As Dahlia came out, she tapped her staff in the form of a 4-foot walking stick, and a blue-white light glowed from its top end.
"This is the way?" Drizzt asked.
"I hope," said Jarlaxle. "We checked the caves as quickly as we could, and this was the only one that seemed promising."
"But there could be other caves in the area that we haven't yet discovered?" an uneasy Drizzt asked.
Jarlaxle shrugged. "Luck has always been on your side, my friend. It's the only reason I asked you along on this journey." Dahlia reacted with alarm to that, until she glanced at Drizzt to see him smiling. The five companions moved through a maze of tunnels and crawl spaces, even splashing through a shallow underground stream for a bit. They hit many dead ends, but many more tunnels broke off into multiple passageways, and they had nothing to guide them but their instincts. Dahlia appeared completely bewildered, but few could navigate dark tunnels better than dwarves, and among those few were the dark elves. Soon enough, they heard sounds far behind them in the tunnels, and knew that the Ashmedai had continued the pursuit into the Underdark. At one point, the five came into a long, fairly straight tunnel, which Athrogate rightly identified as a lava tube. It traveled in the correct direction, and at a gentle downward slope, so they eagerly rambled along it. Eventually, though, a cold mist wafted past them, and Dahlia sucked in her breath and turned her head, watching it depart up the tunnel behind them.
"What ye know?" Brunner asked, catching her concern.
"Deathly cold," Drizzt said.
"Was it?"
Jarlaxle asked the elf warrior. Dahlia nodded.
"Dorcray," she said.
"The vampire,"
Athrogate explained, and Brunner snorted and shook his head in disgust.
"He will bring them to us," Dahlia said.
And they all suspected then how the Ashmedai had come to know so much about their location.
"Perhaps he's returning from Gontalgrim," Drizzt interjected. "If so, this is indeed the correct path."
With that hopeful thought in mind, they pressed on with all speed, and for a long way, hours of walking, the lava tube continued with the same agreeable slope. But then they came to an abrupt end, where the tunnel turned downward sharply, a near-vertical descent into seemingly bottomless darkness. There was no way around that hole, and they had seen no side tunnels throughout the last hours of their march.
"Let us hope your luck holds," Jarlaxle remarked to Drizzt.
and from an obviously magical pouch, the drow mercenary produced a long length of fine cord. He tossed one end to Drizzt and the other to Athrogate, ordering the dwarf to brace it well. Without hesitation, Drizzt tied it off around his waist and went over the lip, quickly disappearing from sight. As he neared the end of that length, Drizzt called up, "It levels off to a sharp but traversable slope." A moment later, there came a flash and a sharp retort. "Drizzt?" Jarlaxle called. "I've set a second rope," Drizzt called from the darkness. "Move!" "No going back," Jarlaxle said to Brunner, apparently deferring to the dwarf. "Then that's the way," Brunner decided, and he was next to the rope. When he reached the bottom where Drizzt had been, Brunner found the second line, drilled deep into the angled ceiling across the way, set firmly into the stone by one of Talmaril's enchanted arrows. The tunnel continued, sometimes a drop, sometimes a gentle slope, and the five managed it fairly well. They were near the end of their endurance, but dared not stop and set camp, and yet there seemed no end in sight. But then they went down a small shaft and under a low archway where the tunnel turned sharply and showed them the glow of underdark lichen. A few moments later, they came out onto a high ledge on a great cavern. Giant stalagmites stood quietly around a still pond, and both Drizzt and Brunner blinked in disbelief, first at the worked tops of those mounds, guard towers, then at the great castle wall across the way. Brunner Battlehammer swallowed hard and glanced at the other dwarf. "Aye, King Brunner," Athrogate said with a wide grin. "I was hoping this cavern survived the explosion, that you might see the front gate. There's your Gontalgrim." Chapter 19. Through the Eyes of an Ancient King.
"It was dumb luck," Dorcray insisted. "There were 10 caves, they might have."
"These are dark elves in the Underdark, fool," Sylora interrupted. "They likely ruled out most of the other caves simply by sniffing the air currents."
Dorcray shrugged and tried to respond, but Sylora growled at him, warning him to silence.
"I'll not have them binding the primordial," the Thane sorceress insisted. "Its awakening will seal the fate of the Netherese along the Sword Coast north, and it will complete the Dread Ring and ensure my victory."
"Yes, my lady," Dorcray said with a bow. "But they are a formidable force. The traitor Dahlia strikes fear into even hearty Ashmedai, and this dark elf, Drizzt, is a legend across the north. But we are talking about a primordial here, a grounded god-being. Could Elminster himself, even in his prime, calm such a beast?"
"It was trapped once to serve Gontalgrim, a prison that lasted millennia."
"A prison keyed by the host tower of the Arcane, which is no more."
"But which exudes residual magic," Sylora warned him. "Trust that if there is a way to rebuild the prison, the clever Jarlaxle has discerned it. They are a threat."
"The Ashmedai pursue them," Dorcray promised her. "And from my recent visit to Gontalgrim, I can assure you that the Primordial has populated its sleeping place with worthy guards, mighty creatures from the Plane of Fire, that have answered its incoherent call. A small army of red-skinned lizard men roam the halls."
"Salamanders,"
Sylora mused.
"Then you have time to get back there and join in the battle."
The look of dread on Dorcray's face as she spoke brought a smile to the sorceress's lips. The vampire had been hesitant from the beginning, and he still harbored fears that Dahlia wanted to move that 10th diamond chip, the one that represented him, from her right ear to her left.
"I can take no chances on this," Sylora went on a moment later. "Awakening the primordial into another act of devastation is our penultimate goal here. Unfortunately, the ultimate goal presses, as the Netherese continue to fight me for Neverwinter Wood, though I still struggle with why, and I dare not leave here. So I send you in respect and confidence."
Dorcray's expression told her that he knew the hollowness of her compliments, but he bowed anyway and said,
"I am humbled, my lady."
"You will take Valindra with you," Sylora said as Dorcray straightened, and the vampire's eyes widened with surprise and trepidation. "She's far more lucent now,"
Sylora assured him. And know this, Valindra Shadowmantle hates Jarlaxle most of all, and has no love for this other drow either, whom she blames in no small part for the loss of Arklem Greith.
She is unpredictable, her power often minimally contained, Dorcray warned. She might have a fit, manifested magically, that would facilitate exactly that which you fear most.
Sylora narrowed her eyes at the vampire, warning him that she didn't like having her judgment so boldly questioned. She let it go at that, though, for there was a measure of possibility in Dorcray's fears. Indeed, as she thought about her decision in that moment, it occurred to Sylora that the vampire might be right, that Valindra was too much the unexpected bounce of the bones, as the old Faean saying went. Sylora tried to fathom a way to back out of her command that he take Valindra, thinking she might posit that she only suggested Valindra to test Dorcray's understanding of the situation. But when such a remark fell flat even in her thoughts, she decided against it. Which left the stubborn leader, who would never admit she was wrong, only one option. Valindra will expedite your return to the caverns, and once there she can move as swiftly as you through the tunnels.
Unless she wanders off, Dorcray dared mutter.
And Sylora flashed him an angry glare. You will guide her, Sylora told him in no uncertain terms. And when you have caught up to our enemies, point her at the two drow, remind her of who they are and what they did to her precious host tower and Arklem Greith. Then watch in awe as the mighty lich brings old Gauntlegrim itself down on the heads of our enemies.
Yes, my lady, Dorcray replied with another bow,
though his tone seemed less than satisfied. And consider, Sylora tossed out at him just for the pleasure of it, if Valindra can lead the assault against our enemies, then you might not have to do battle with Dahlia, though I know how dearly you wish to challenge her. The biting sarcasm, the bald expression of Dorcray's fear, wiped away any response from the vampire. His shoulders slumped, his entire form seemed to deflate. He knew Sylora was right. As with the cavern outside, the circular entry room had survived the cataclysm nearly intact. The throne still sat there, a silent testament to that which had come before, like a guardian of the past holding to its post. The whole of the place had Drizzt staring wide-eyed and his jaw hanging slack, as it had done to Jarlaxle and Athrogate, and even Dahlia, when first they had passed through the audience chamber. Worse off than the drow, Brunner nearly fell over, so overwhelmed was he. Drizzt regained his composure by considering his friend, his beloved companion of so many decades, who stood in the entry hall of the place that had been the focus of his life for more than half a century. Tears rimmed Brunner's eyes, and his breath came in uneven gasps, as if he kept forgetting to breathe, then had to force the air in and out.
Elf, he whispered. Do ye see it, Elf?
In all its glory, my friend, Drizzt replied. He started to say something more, but Brunner began drifting away from him, as if pulled by some unseen force. The dwarf walked across the room, not looking left or right, his eyes fixated on his goal, as if it, the throne, was calling out to him. He stepped up to the small dais, the other four hustling to catch up.
"Don't ye do it!" Athrogate started to warn him, but Jarlaxle hushed the dwarf.
Brunner tentatively reached out to touch the arm of the fabulous throne. He retracted his hand immediately and leaped back, eyes wide. He hopped in circles, eyes darting to and fro, hands out wide as if he were uncertain whether to flee or fight. The others rushed over and Brunner visibly relaxed, then turned back to the throne.
"What happened?"
Athrogate asked.
Brunner pointed to the throne.
"No regular chair."
"You're telling me." Athrogate, who had been thrown across the room by the power of that throne, replied. Brunner looked at him with a furrowed brow.
"Aye, she's quite the fabulous work," Athrogate agreed after a glance at Jarlaxle.
"More than that,"
a breathless Brunner said. "Imbued with magic," Dahlia reasoned.
"Thick with magic," Jarlaxle assured her. Thick with memory,
Brunner corrected. Drizzt moved up beside Brunner and slowly reached out toward the chair.
Don't ye do that, Brunner warned. Not yourself and not him, most of all, he added, indicating Jarlaxle. Not any of ye, just meself.
Looking to Jarlaxle, who nodded, Drizzt demanded of his fellow Menzo Berenir, What do you know?
No, Jarlaxle replied. I know what I hoped. This place is full of ghosts, full of magic and full of memory. My hope was that a Delzoon king, our friend Brunner here, might find a way to tap into those memories.
He was looking at Brunner by the time he finished, and Drizzt and the others too regarded the dwarf king. Brunner steadied himself.
Let's see then, he declared.
He took a deep breath and boldly strode forward up onto the dais to stand before the throne. Hands on hips, he stared at it for a long while, then nodded, turned, and plopped down on the chair, pointedly grabbing the arms as he did. Athrogate gasped and ducked his head. But Brunner wasn't rejected by the ancient throne. He stared back at his four friends for just a few heartbeats. Then they were gone. Their forms shivered and wavered, then dissipated into nothingness. The dwarf was not alone. The room around him teemed with his kin and echoed with the whispers of a thousand conversations. Brunner steeled himself and did not panic. It was the magic of the throne, he told himself. He had not been taken from his friends, nor they from him. But his mind was looking backward across the centuries, back to the time of Gontalgrim. Before him stood a group of elves, most in the type of robes one would expect a wizard to wear. And beside them stood important-looking dwarves, clan leaders, obviously, given their regalia and posture. Brunner had to consciously force himself to breathe when he noted one wearing the foaming mug crest of Clan Battlehammer emblazoned on his breastplate. Gandalug! Was it Gandalug, the first and ninth king of Mithril Hall? Could it be? Certainly the dwarf resembled the founder of Mithril Hall, but more likely it was Gandalug's father, or his father's father. Gandalug, after all, had never mentioned Gontalgrim in the short time Brunner had known him, after his escape from the Drow time prison, and Gontalgrim was too much older than Mithril Hall, by Brunner's understanding, for that to be Gandalug Battlehammer. Brunner knew then, though, that the symbol on the dwarf's breastplate, the foaming mug crest, was not a coincidence. It was indeed the forefather of Mithril Hall standing before him, standing before the king of Gontalgrim. A sense of community, of timelessness, and of being a part of something greater washed over Brunner, flooding him with warmth and serenity. Brunner forced himself to get past that tantalizing distraction and focus on the moment at hand. He came to know then that he was seeing through the eyes of a king of Gontalgrim, as if his own consciousness had crossed the seas of time to be afforded a seat at a time long past. He worked hard to clear his mind then, to let himself simply absorb what he saw and leave the interpretation of it for later on. His other senses joined in, and soon he was hearing more clearly the conversations around him. They were talking about the host tower of the Arcane. The elf visitors were from the host tower. They were talking about the tendrils of magic and trapping a primordial to fire the furnaces of Gontalgrim. Brunner could hardly believe the scene unfolding before him. The elves were concerned that their gift to the dwarves would be stolen by their dark-skinned relatives, the Drow, to wreak devastation on all of Faerûn. The dwarves argued strenuously. One pointed out that they had discussed all of that before the Delzoon clan had helped build the host tower in the distant village. Village, not city. Brunner could feel the tension of his host, the dwarf king who sat on the throne of Gontalgrim. He could feel the king's muscles clenching as surely as if they were his own, and indeed, he wondered if his friends were looking upon his own corporeal form in that distant future place, to see him grabbing the arms of the throne and squirming in growing anger. An elf woman stepped forward. She reminded Brunner very much of Lady Illustrial of Silvery Moon. She spoke in a dialect Brunner couldn't easily understand, an ancient, dwarvish, broken by her elvish accent. but he figured out that she was promising the king that her people would abide by their agreement.
"But ye must know, weren't terrors on the beast bane afraid," she warbled, "and to drow pushing fires to the above."
"Ain't no drow fur to be in me kingdom," the dwarf replied flatly.
"Ain't be your choosing," she agreed.
"Ain't to be."
Brunner's head spun as they continued their discussion. It was the most critical moment of the Delzoon clan, he realized. It was the critical moment of their bargain with the wizards, when the host tower of the Arcane had repaid them with the power to fashion the legendary weapons and armor of old. That bargain had given the Delzoon clan supremacy among their kin in the north, and had spawned the kingdoms that had survived to Brunner's day. He was privy to, looked in upon, the greatest moment in his clan's history. Perhaps the greatest moment in the history of Faerûn's dwarves.
"Ye'll have your fires," the regal elf finished and bowed.
The room blurred, the images wavering like the rising air off hot stone on a blistering sunny day. For a moment, Drizzt and the others began taking shape again before him, but the dwarf rejected that. Not now. He couldn't return to them yet. There was too much yet to learn.
"Brunner," he heard Drizzt say.
But the dwarf king let the drow's voice slide past him, let it fall away to nothingness as he retreated across the centuries. That image faded, and another replaced it. He wasn't in the audience chamber any longer. He saw a pair of elves holding hands and standing in front of an opened alcove in a wall. Within lay a bowl of water, not so different from those Jarlaxle had brought with them. The water in that bowl rotated as the elves chanted, calling it forth. It swirled into a mist, and that mist grew into a living form, somewhat humanoid in shape. It stood tiny within the alcove at first. The water in the bowl was not the whole of the beast, but merely a conduit to bring it forth. And so it grew, soon filling the small alcove, and seemed as if it would burst out of that hole like a great breaking wave. Something caught it and pulled it from inside the wall, and Brunner watched as the elemental elongated upward and was swept up a chimney within the alcove hole. He understood then that a tendril from the host tower was at the top of that chimney, that the elemental had been swept into place as a living bar for the primordial's cage. And so it went from spot to spot, the elves setting the magic bowls in place. Brunner lost track of time as the corridors of Gontalgrim rolled past him. He saw, in his mind, through the eyes of Gontalgrim's king, whose name he still did not know, the great and legendary Forge of Gontalgrim, and the image was tangible, as if he were actually there. The whole of the complex became familiar to him, as if his Delzoon blood was imparting the memories from that unknown king unto him. He understood the role the dwarves had played in creating the host tower of the Arcane, and the responding gift the elves had given to Gontalgrim. He saw the forge room, the legendary Forge of Gontalgrim, and he was inspired. And he saw the primordial, freed of the great depths, and trapped in the fire chamber beneath the forge, and he was afraid. That was no orc king, no giant, no dragon even. It was an earth-bound godhead, a literal force of nature that could alter the shape of continents. What could he do against that? He witnessed the flood of water as the tendrils of the host tower were first activated, bringing nourishment and ocean power to the trapped elementals. He saw and heard the great rush of living water rumble into the critical chamber, dive over the rim, and spin powerfully around the shaft above the primordial forevermore. Or so they all hoped. He saw the Forge of Gontalgrim light for the first time with primordial power, its glow reflecting on the awe-stricken faces of dwarf and elf alike. And he knew that he was at the moment of the greatest glory his people had ever known. Then he was back in the audience chamber, 1,000 dwarves hoisting foamy mugs high in celebration. Tears streaked the king's face, and Brunner knew not if they were his or those of his host. The sound dulled, the image blurred, the forms wavered and lost all color. Then the sound around him was replaced by the din of battle, and the dwarves of old were ghosts and nothing more. And he was Brunner Battlehammer again, just Brunner, sitting on a throne in the middle of a circular room, while his four companions fought for their lives against a swarm of tall, slender, humanoid creatures, standing as men and holding spears and tridents as men might,
but with fire flaring and bursting angrily around their feet. No, not feet, but tails. They were as men only from the waist up. The rest of them slithered across the rough stone like snakes. Long spikes of black bone bristled from their backs, and twisted antlers grew from their heads. A vague old memory came to Brunner then. He knew them, had heard tell of them. Elemental kin. Salamanders. Brunner's eyes opened wide, and with a roar he leaped from the throne, setting his shield and pulling forth his axe as he went. To those around him who turned at his yell, friend and foe alike, the dwarf seemed to swell with power and strength, his muscles thickening, his eyes flaring with an inner fire. He charged into the nearest group of salamanders with abandon, great sweeps of his axe throwing them aside. A trident stabbed at him from the left, but his shield arm was quicker, rushing across to intercept and deflect the blow up high, and as Brunner followed through, his axe swept across with tremendous power. The creature fell apart, cut in half at the waist. As if the gods of the dwarves themselves had settled into King Brunner, he roared on, cutting a swath of devastation, and he called allies to his side, not Drizzt and the others, but the ghosts of Gontalgrim. "By Clangadin's hard arse," Athrogate muttered from back near the throne. The dwarf fought to keep the snake men away from Jarlaxle as the drow mercenary concentrated on Drizzt and Dalia, looking for openings as they weaved, leaped, and spun back and forth past each other. Whenever he found such an opening, the agile dark elf flung a dagger through it, almost unerringly striking one of the creatures. The four of them fought well together, much like three of them had back at Spirit Soaring those many years before. Yet King Brunner alone was cutting a wider swath of devastation through the massing salamanders. Drizzt had begun to swing toward his friend as soon as Brunner had entered the fray. Dalia, playing off his every move, followed, but Drizzt had quickly changed his mind. Watching Brunner at that moment, he held back and focused instead on holding his ground. The tide of battle turned quickly as more and more dwarf ghosts filtered into the chamber. On the far side of the room, the salamanders tried to surround Brunner, and seemed to be doing just that. Drizzt cried out for his friend and second-guessed his earlier decision not to help him. He thought Brunner doomed, and believed it was his own hesitance that had guaranteed that. But Brunner faced his enemies with wild eyes and a wicked grin. He lifted his foot, stomped it down hard, and an explosion of lightning flashed out in a circle around him, throwing salamanders through the air like dry leaves in a strong gale. "What in the nine hells?" Athrogate asked. "Drizzt?" a clearly befuddled Jarlaxle inquired. Beside Drizzt, Dalia, whose own weapon could loose such bursts of lightning, gasped in disbelief. And Drizzt Do'Urden could only shake his head. High in the shadows of the great room, another set of eyes watched the battle unfolding with great hope that the Primordial's minions would do his work for him. Perhaps he, Dorcray, could fly right back out of the chamber and back to the caves to tell Valindra and the Ashmedai to turn back for Neverwinter Wood. He dearly hoped that would be the case. But then Dorcray stared with increasing disbelief at the spectacle of the godly empowered Brunner Battlehammer, and he watched the tide of battle quickly turn. He looked back at the throne and was afraid. Events seemed to be moving past him, first with Valindra and the powerful gift Sylora had given her, then the sight of the mighty dwarf. He glanced back toward the cavern beyond Gontalgrim, the approach the Ashmedai and Valindra would soon take. And he considered Sylora's words of warning and the power she had entrusted to the Lich. The thought of trusting Valindra, and more than that, of trusting the power she had been given, made Dorcray want to flee back to Thay and take his chances with Zas Tam. He turned back to the battle, hoping against all reason that the minions of the Primordial would somehow find a way to put an end to the threat of his mistress's plans. That blast of godlike power proved the end of the assault, with the salamanders rushing for any exit they could find as fast as they could find them, leaving fiery trails in their wakes. Brunner chased one group, leaping high and fully 30 feet across the stones to land in their midst, his axe chopping them down viciously one after another. The dwarf seemed to get stabbed several times in that mad rush, each drawing a cry of pain from Drizzt, who rushed to join him. And Brunner seemed not to notice any of the strikes. By the time the four others arrived by his side, the dwarf king stood amidst half a dozen slain creatures. The rest of the beasts had fled the room, and the dwarf ghosts had given chase. Brunner blinked repeatedly as he considered his friends.
"What did you do?"
Jarlaxle asked. Brunner could only shrug. Drizzt studied his friend more closely, even pulling aside Brunner's collar, but he could find no wound.
"How did you do that?" Dahlia asked, stomping your foot as if you were a god of lightning.
Brunner shrugged and shook his head.
He seemed quite perplexed for a few moments, but then just shook his head again and let it all go, turning to Jarlaxle instead.
"I know where to put your bowls," he said to Jarlaxle.
"How could you know?"
Brunner considered that for a short while.
"How indeed?"
"Gondelgrim telled me," he said, with a grin.
Chapter 20 Powers older, powers deeper. The Ashmedai came into the circular chamber with tentative steps, though the echoes of battle had long since faded. Valindra Shadowmantle led the way, flanked by 20 of Sylora's best warriors. The lich focused almost immediately on the throne, and she drifted that way, floating, not walking, while her minions spread out to examine the corpses scattered about the floor. She stopped in front of the throne, sensing its great magic. Valindra had spent her life studying the art, as a wizard in the famed host tower of the Arcane, before the spell plague, and before she had fallen into death, then undeath, at the hand of Arclem Greith. Valindra had been a wizard of great power, impeccable scholarship, and considerable renown. As a lich, Valindra had survived the spell plague, though it had surely harmed her mind. But at long last she was returning to her senses and gathering her newfound powers in the unfamiliar energies of post-spell plague arcana. Its powers having transcended even the dramatic changes that had been visited upon Faerun, the throne knocked her back to that time before. The magic in it was ancient and reverberated within Valindra, taking her to a place of familiar comfort she had not known in decades. She cooed and awed before the throne, her emaciated, pale hands reaching out but never quite touching the powerful artifact. Lost in her thoughts and memories, in the better times she had known as a living wizard, Valindra failed even to notice when a pair of her Ashmedai commanders came up beside her.
"Lady Valindra,"
one, a large male tiefling, said. When she didn't respond, he repeated the words much more loudly. Valindra started and turned on him, her ghostly eyes flickering with threatening red flames.
"The dead are of the Plane of Fire, we believe," the tiefling explained. "Minions of the Primordial?"
Valindra's perplexed expression conveyed that she hadn't even really heard the question, let alone digested it.
"Yes,"
another voice answered, and the two Ashmedai commanders and Valindra turned just as a bat fluttering up behind the throne seemed to fall over itself and take humanoid form.
"Minions of the Primordial, worshippers, really," Dorcray explained. "These salamanders and large red lizards, deeper in the complex, even a small red dragon have come to the call of the volcano." "There are more?"
the male Ashmedai asked.
"There are many,"
Dorcray replied, walking around the dais to join the trio.
"Perhaps they will do our job for us, then," said the Ashmedai. "Perhaps they already have."
Dorcray laughed at that notion and waved out his arm, inviting the others to take another look at the result of the battle, a battle he had watched from the shadows of the room's high ceiling.
"I would not,"
he started to say. But he paused as he noticed that Valindra paid him no heed, that she had turned her attention back to the throne.
"I wouldn't count on the inhabitants of the complex to defeat the likes of Jarlaxle and his mighty dwarf," Dorcray told the Ashmedai. "Or of Dahlia and Drizzt D'Urden.
He glanced at Valindra again, watching as she ascended the dais, still staring at the throne as if in a trance.
They are formidable enough, or were, but now are even more so. I watched them in this very room, and the other dwarf with them, a king of the dwarves, it would seem, has somehow been magically enhanced.
The two Ashmedai scrunched up their faces, glanced at each other, then turned back to Dor Kray with obvious confusion.
Through the power in that very throne, Dor Kray explained, turning to Valindra as he spoke.
The lich didn't seem to hear him.
There is some ancient magic there that empowered him, Dor Kray warned them all.
Magic, yes,
Valindra cooed, her hand waving over the arm of the throne. Then suddenly, the lich slapped her hand down and grabbed the throne. Her eyes went wide and she issued a hiss of protest. It was clear that she was struggling mightily to hold on to the throne, as if it was trying to throw her aside. Stubbornly, the lich growled and fought back. Then she turned and sat down on the throne, grasping the arms with both hands. She growled and snarled, thrashing about, hissing and sputtering a stream of curses. Her back arched as if some unseen force lifted her free, and she growled again and uttered a curse at some dwarf king and forced herself back down. To the onlookers, the three before the throne and many others about the room, she seemed like a halfling trying to hold back the charge of an umber hulk.
The struggle intensified. Flashes of lightning, blue, white, and black, shot from the chair, and Dor Kray and the Ashmedai commanders fell back.
The throne of Gontalgrim was clearly and violently rejecting Valindra, but the lich would not accept that. But at last, with a rumble that shook the chamber, and indeed reverberated deep into the complex of Gontalgrim, the throne expelled her, hurling Valindra through the air. She magically caught herself in mid-descent, and came down gently to her normal stance, floating just a few inches above the floor.
"Valindra?" Dor Kray asked, but the lich didn't hear him.
She swept back in at the throne, hands extended like killing claws. With a wicked hiss, she shot fingers of lightning from her hands. When the bolts merely disappeared into the magical throne, the outraged Valindra summoned instead a pea of fire, which she threw onto the seat.
"Run!" the Ashmedai commander yelled, and the warriors scrambled all over each other to get away from the throne.
Valindra's fireball engulfed the throne, the dais, and a good portion of the floor around it. The angry flames reached up to the lich herself, who seemed not to care. None of the Ashmedai were caught in the blast, though one found his weather cloak aflame and had to roll about frantically on the floor to douse it. When the flames and smoke cleared, there sat the throne, unbothered, unmarred, impervious. Valindra shrieked and hissed and charged it, again throwing bolts of lightning into it as she rushed in, then clawed at it and punched it.
"She is powerful, no doubt," the Ashmedai leader whispered as he walked up beside Dor Kray. "But I fear her presence here."
"Sylora Somm decided that she should come," Dor Kray reminded him. "That is not without reason, and it is not your place to question."
"Of course,"
the man said, lowering his gaze. Dor Kray glared at him a bit longer, making sure he knew his place. They couldn't afford such intemperate and mutinous whispers, not with powerful enemies just ahead. Truthfully, though, when Dor Kray looked back at the throne and the thrashing, insane Valindra, he found it hard to disagree with the zealot's words. They couldn't begin to control the lich, and he knew without a doubt that if she saw a target for a fireball and the entire squad of Ashmedai happened to be in the blast area, she wouldn't even care. The tremor grumbled through the stone floor, giving all five a bit of a shake. It seemed nothing too much to Drizzt, but when he looked at Brunner, the drow had second thoughts.
"What do you know?" Jarlaxle asked Brunner before Drizzt could.
"Bah! The beast belched and nothing more,"
said Athrogate, but Brunner's expression told a different story.
"Weren't the beast," he said, shaking his head. "Our enemies have entered behind us. They fight the Ancient Ones."
"The Ancient Ones?" Drizzt and Dahlia asked together, and they looked at each other in surprise.
"The dwarves of Gontalgrim," Jarlaxle explained.
"The throne," Brunner corrected. "They struck at the throne."
"To what end?" Brunner shook his head, his expression revealing confidence that the throne was in no real danger. He glanced all around then, however, and added,
"The ghosts are gone."
The others all looked around as well, and sure enough, they saw no ghosts in the